Welcome back to Throttled Up the Podcast. Definitely an exciting night tonight. We've got a full house in studio with us, and some people that we have definitely been looking forward to getting in studio with us. So, Matt, first of all, been a couple weeks. We've been to PRI since we've been on, had some fun, and how's things going?
My feet have finally recuperated there after we walked 7.5 miles indoors.
I know, and tried to take a break there and go to Champs and had one of the most awkward experiences I've ever had.
You guys ever been to a restaurant and the waitress tried to make you leave?
Never been to one of those before.
And I was even...
You have, Brad?
Yeah, I asked George Covey.
No, I mean, she was ready for us to leave when we walked in. We didn't act up and get asked to leave. I mean, she just didn't want to wait on us.
Yeah, we were even trying to kind of run up a bill a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we thought we'd
have a good time.
Have a couple beverages, and, you know, she was like, here's your guys' check. You know, enjoy the rest of your day. So,
dang. Yeah. She was... actually, our appetizer came before our beverages, which is uncalled for in every sense of the word.
Wow.
So
she wasn't just doing that to us, though, because the table behind us, the guy got up and went and got the beverages.
He served himself.
Yeah.
So she wasn't a very good waitress, I guess.
No, it was disappointing. So, all right, well, before we get started, let's talk about our sponsors here. First, In the Fast Lane Productions. If you haven't seen, In the Fast Lane Productions is going through some website updates right now. So if you're trying to log in and that's not working, give it some time. They're making the experience better for all of us. But a huge shout out to InTheFastLaneProductions.com and everything that they do. They are your source for all the racing videos and action at Brownstown Speedway.
Next one's going to be Schaefer Photo and Custom Tees. They're the place for any race fan to get racing memorabilia. Mark and Jamie Schaefer will work to make whatever custom photo product you would like, from prints, keychains, magnets, buttons, and much more. During the race season, stop by the Schaefer Photo and Custom Tees booth and let Bronze Bobby know what he can do for you.
Miller's Termite and Pest Control is the only place you need to look for pest control. Don't get roped into contracts or high prices with the big companies. Reach out to someone who cares about you. They can handle any problem from termites, bed bugs, ants, and spiders. And you can reach out to them on Facebook at Miller's Termite and Pest Control, email at pest_n_peace@yahoo.com, or by phone at 812-767-5657. I will say again, had them come out and spray the house just last Wednesday. Did a great job. My wife is happy, which means I'm happy. So if you have ants in your house, which is what I had, call them. They took care of me. Then P3 Graphics. P3 Graphics is one of Indiana's premier suppliers for motorsports wraps and apparel. P3 Graphics offers great pricing along with some of the best customer service in the industry. Give them a try on your next project and you won't be sorry. You can contact them via email, phone, or on Facebook on the P3 Graphics page. Find out more at www.p3graphics.com. Also, Tommy Taylor, Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance. Tommy Taylor is an agent at Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance. He can provide you with auto, home, life, commercial, farm, and does with a personal touch that you can't get with other insurance companies. For any insurance needs you may have, Tommy has the capability to provide you with the right amount of coverage. Tommy is not just a sponsor of the podcast. He is also my family's personal insurance agent and should be yours, too. Give him a call, shoot him an email, or message him on Facebook, and he'll be happy to take care of any of your insurance needs. And then... special tonight, sponsors.
We got Brownstown Speedway, too.
Oh, did I skip you?
Yeah, you skipped me there.
Man,
I'm used to you overlooking me like that.
I got on a roll, and I couldn't stop.
Racing from March to October. Also, don't forget, guys, this year we do have the Hell Tour date back for the Summer Nationals, so that is coming this year. So, Jeremy, you with the Modified, I'm sure you get to participate in that night also, so that'll be fun for you.
Yep.
And then also Brad Irwin Customs. Contact Brad Irwin Customs for bodies, interiors, fab work, setup, and consulting. With Brad Irwin Customs, you can stick them deeper. Give Brad a call today at 812-216-3900.
And very lucky that tonight...
Brad Irwin in the studio.
With us in studio, so...
Not sure who's lucky, but...
So, well, first of all, we are going to give away some stuff tonight because I already threw it out there, and we've got about 40 people here on Facebook Live following along with us. So here's how this is going to go, guys. I've got several different questions that I kind of put together, and I'm going to give away T-shirts, hats, total prize packs. We'll just give away anything we can tonight. So once I ask the question, the first person to comment on Facebook Live is going to be our winner. So
just any comment?
Well, it gives the correct answer in the comment. Comment the correct answer. will be our winner. So, and Michael, I already see, Mike, I see you that you ask if Brad Irwin Customs beverages are cold. They are the third coldest beverages in Crothersville.
Not quite as cold as my shop, but close.
Oh, whoa. Again, hey, I keep looking for the door to be open.
I'm just going to say he's drinking throttled up beverage.
He is.
Not Irwin Customs beverage.
He is. He came in with an empty glass. Yeah.
You can come to my shop with an empty glass, and I'll take care of it.
No, Crothersville's a small town. It's the best debate in Crothersville right now is who's got the coldest beverages.
Thirsties.
Yeah, they take good care, too. All right, so here is the I'll throw out the first question, and we will we'll do this for a throttled up T-shirt. Whoever wins, I will reach out to you by message on Facebook, and we'll get you set up so we can get that to you. So one thing we have tried to do is to expand our social media presence, and we started a Snapchat account. So the question is, what is our Snapchat username? So the first person that can give us our Snapchat username on Facebook Live is the winner of a throttled up T-shirt, courtesy of us. So we'll see. I see Derek Clegg's on. I know he's already an owner of a throttled up T-shirt, so he may not be the one that jumps on here with us. So first person that can tell me what our Snapchat username is will be our winner. So
I'm kind of curious myself.
You don't even know what it is?
I don't have Snapchat, or I'd try to figure it out too. Yeah. So.
I was gonna say we've got
the peanut gallery in the back knows.
And
Keith Sparkman just said, "Where the heck is Old White Shoes at tonight?" So,
and Brent Lee's our winner.
Yes,
Brent Lee
is.
Comes
Brent
up
Lee
with
comes right
"Get Throttled" is absolutely the name. So, Brent, I will reach out to you and get you that T-shirt. So don't disconnect from Facebook Live. We got some other questions we're going to ask here and give away some more stuff tonight. Sparkman. Old White Shoes is at home buffing up his tennis shoes, making sure they're ready.
He's probably already asleep.
Yeah. What I've seen on Facebook is he's just trying to survive the next 2 days and get to Christmas vacation.
Yeah.
And Justin Bowling says, you don't have Snapchat? I mean, even bowling.
I'm guessing I'm behind on the times. I don't know.
Bowling's on there, so... All right, so guys, I'll just throw this out and to kind of get us started here, and Brad, you've obviously got a rich history here in racing and everything that you've done. So where did it come from? Where did this passion for the sport come from?
Oh, wow. My dad always took me to the races, whenever I was young, and golly, I can remember when I was a kid. I don't care if it was a tractor, I was pushing it around in the dirt thinking I was racing. Just always loved it. Started at Masters Built straight out of high school and never looked back.
And what is it about it? I mean, that's obviously you've got this family history, which a lot of us have that brings about it. But what is it that keeps you coming back to that racetrack?
I'm very competitive. Always said I may not be the best driver as far as when I race my own car, but I love to win, even if it's helping somebody like Jeremy, Brandon, Mark Barber. I want to see them guys do better, so it, you know, if it shows through them and I'm a part of it, that's good enough for me.
That's pretty awesome. And I know that some of the times Jeremy's been on, we've even talked about, you being in the lineup shoot and Jeremy trying to get a hold of you and get some things answered. So it's really awesome, the stuff that you try and do to help these other drivers.
Yeah, I enjoy that. I mean, it's really, I wouldn't say there's any one racer I actually dislike. But my close group of friends, it's like a brotherhood. It really is. I mean, I want to see every one of them guys win every night if it's possible. It can't happen, but that's what I like to see.
I think that's what's the best part of racing is the relationships built inside the sport. You know, that it don't seem like, you know, the stick and ball sports, you build them as close-knit and as tight as what you can do in motorsports. So,
yeah, like our group, I mean, literally, you know, like at Brownstown, it's referred to as the Turn 2 group. I mean, we hang around with each other away from the racetrack. I mean, that's what makes it fun.
Well, and I think that's the coolest thing. We've talked about it on here, too, is the fact that, you know, even somebody that you're a competitor with, you'll pull a part out of your trailer and give it to them because you'd rather see them on the racetrack with you and beat them that way than them be off the racetrack.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
But it, you know, and it's been fun for us, and you know, and I know Matt obviously has had the role as the announcer there for a while, but for us, it's been a ton of fun to kind of build those relationships as well. You know, we were laughing before, Jeremy. I mean, how many times have you been on now?
Third time, I think.
Third time, yeah.
Third time and fourth, but you were here a fourth time sitting on the couch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was. So, me and Bert were sitting on the couch back there. I forgot about that.
So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to have you guys, you know, continue to come back. So. But,
I think this helps me with announcing because it gives me so many side stories that I can talk about when you guys are out on the racetrack. That,
for sure.
That, you know, I might not even know. Yep. You know, so that, I think that helps a whole lot.
For sure. A lot of history that you might not have known that you learned. So
started at Masterbuilt, obviously. Obviously now is at Brad Irwin Customs. And obviously you do body work. You are known, and not the coldest beverage in Crothersville, but known as one of the best body guys around. You know, a lot of people talk about the body work you do. So how did you kind of transition into that part of, you know, bodybuilding and those kind of, not bodybuilding in that sense, but building bodies?
Yeah, when I started the Masters, I mean, it was kind of went down there and was looking for a job and wanted to work with race cars and really wasn't good at anything at that point. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I stood down there in front of a drill press for probably 3 weeks drilling holes. I mean, that's where I started at. But as I moved around through the shop, as far as the aluminum work on the bodies, that's kind of where my knack really picked up and it took off from there. And the other stuff growed as I was there through time, but that's what took off first.
You know, and I think that's pretty impressive that you admit that it wasn't a knack right off. Because
no.
I think that's the other thing in racing that's so impressive is the fact of, you know, guys continuing to grind and get better and you know, understand their cars and understand racing in the same sense as you and wanting to work in the field is, hey, you spent 3 weeks at the drill press just drilling holes. So.
Oh, I've even washed tubing with gas. I mean, I've done it all. That, you know.
Did you have any fabricating experience at all before you walked in the doors down there?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah, really zero.
And, you know, that's pretty cool right there that they even gave you a shot, you know.
Yeah, it takes time. It kind of develops. And, I mean, I was there for 23, 24 years. I've seen guys that walked in the door and could pick it up very quick. And I've seen guys that walked in the door down there and never did get it. I mean, it's the same way with racing. It all kind of progresses along the way the longer you work at it.
You know, me and Mike, my brother, we worked in a machine shop for 11 years. And I think me and him both would have been rather down there with you on the race just because, you know, he's race car crazy than you know, all the stuff we was machining in the machine shops. You know, that was the hard part for us.
Right,
we had the knowledge. We just didn't work on what we wanted to work on.
Right, yes.
You know.
What do you think the biggest change from, you know, that when you started at Masterbuilt to today? What is the biggest change in those race cars?
Wow.
I'm going to say it's going from an 8.5-inch spoiler to an 8-inch spoiler.
It was 8.25. Just to clarify, 8.25. Honestly, money. I mean, everybody talks about shock packages. Everybody's big on if they think, you know, somebody, if they're not running up front, they don't think they have the right shock package, you know. But money has killed racing, really.
Yes, it has.
I mean, it really has.
Because it's not, I mean, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's taken the driver skill out of it and the wrenching skill a little bit because it's kind of given a handicap to it.
If you can afford to buy that talent, yes. I mean, you still have to be able to drive a race car. It just, it puts some guys in a position 20 years ago, if they didn't have that money behind them to buy that knowledge, they may be, you know, running back mid-pack or towards the tail of the feature. And now it seems like that money on a local weekly show can put you right at the front if you just have minimal driving skills.
Yeah. And you know, feel that way as a driver too? Are you kind of
I think so, just from watching it throughout the years. I mean, now I don't – you got to be still a driver like Brad said, but you – really, if you have enough money, you could run up front. I'm pretty sure if you had enough money and put somebody that's raced at a lower level, maybe not been able to afford the high-dollar equipment, they could be a better driver with the right equipment. It just, it's that extra money to be put into that car that you might not have right now.
Well, and I think when we've talked to some of the older drivers, more experienced drivers, you know, the thing I think a lot of younger guys are missing is the idea of the feel. I mean, like, you know, I could just feel and adjust what I'm doing. Now it's all about, I'll adjust it in the car or I'll adjust it in the equipment. And again, I'm not taking away from the guys that drive and with the technology.
Definitely not.
But, you know, before it was all about they'd feather the throttle differently. They'd brake differently. They'd enter the corner differently. Now it's more about this is the line I'm going to run. The car needs to be set up to hit that line.
Yeah. Yeah. And years ago, whenever, you know, everything we raced on years ago, come feature time, everything typically would get slick. And usually in the slick, your cream of the crop drivers would automatically rise to the top regardless of what they had because of their skill as a driver. Now, you can't take that away because those guys that are running up front and winning races, them guys can flat out drive. There's no doubt about it. But we don't finesse anymore. Regardless of track situation, I mean, we are pretty much flat out wide open all the time. It, you know, so that's where the money comes in and the technology and stuff. You've got to have that car capable of doing that in any situation.
I know when Bobby, you know, Bowling was on here, he's talking about Paul Crockett. You know, he said they jacked their back of the car up and they'd look at where the rear end kind of angled and then they'd try to adjust to that and they'd go out and race. You know, now you guys got so many adjustments on it. Yeah. I mean, you can tweak it right
in.
Well,
that was Paul's poor man scales at the racetrack. right on. Underneath the rear end and know how much left rear wheel weight you had in it. That's what they were doing. That's where Bobby's coming in with that.
Yeah.
Well, and I just, you know, I think it's amazing to see, you know, how how the game has changed so much in the sense of, you know, also that you can tune, you can tune while you're at the track. You know, not that you have to, this is our setup, we feel like this is good, you know, we're gonna swing for the fences with this, and then the driver skill makes up for it. You can make so many adjustments to a car during a race weekend, especially if you have money and you have the team behind you and those kind of things to help that.
Right, but you got to have that knowledge too, because there's a 50-50 chance that whenever you swing for the fences, you're making the wrong move.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's the thing. I mean, that's a lot of times where that money comes in, because you got to have that knowledge behind you with that.
And Jeff Lewis just commented here and said, Brad, you gave them the baseline setup for Skyler's first car. So they had no idea and had to start somewhere, and it helped them out a bunch. So, again, there's somebody else that's you know, shouting out to you about everything you've done.
It might not have been right, but it had to be close.
Oh, yeah.
it was somewhere to start from.
Well, if you don't know where to start from, I mean, right, you know, anything's more than what you had. So.
Jeremy, and all the time that you've been around and worked with, you know, Brad, what do you think the biggest lesson you've learned from Brad is?
Write stuff down, take notes. That's probably the biggest thing, because, I mean, if you ain't taking notes about what you're changing, what you're doing every night at the racetrack, you're not going to get nowhere, because, really, if you take notes and you figure out what you're doing, what works, what don't work, it helps you at the racetrack more than anything, I think. So, definitely take notes.
And, Brad, would you say small adjustments or big adjustments?
I'm typically for one or two small adjustments, because the problem is if you start making too many big adjustments, if you're off, okay, yeah, we got way better, but wait a minute, we changed four big things. Which one helped?
Right. And I think that's something that where guys miss it sometimes too. You make all these adjustments and you don't know which one was the positive, yeah. you know, and which one do I need to take away?
And one and two might not even made a difference.
Right.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, which I'm going to say, you know, Jeremy this year, which at the end of the year, we actually found it, and what we found was very small, but we were taking some pretty big swings at Jeremy's car, and even a couple times there I was coming in, okay, we got better, but I'm scratching my head, well, which one fixed what where?
And to kind of go back to the race season, Jeremy, you did kind of have a, I don't want to say an up and down year, but you started out strong. You had, and I know we talked before, you know, kind of a middle of the year, I don't know what the right word is, rut or
yep. slump.
Slump. Okay. I don't want to take any disrespect from it, but, and you had even talked on here that you just were searching for that car setup. And I'm going to ask you this, as a driver, how frustrating is it that you feel like you're good, the car's good, but you're missing that one thing?
It's real frustrating, I guess. You know, because we started out strong. We won our feature at Bloomington, first time being there in 5 years. We go out there and win the first night out, Bloomington. We run good at Eldora. We just get caught up in a wreck early. Kind of hurts us there. But then we struggled all year at Brownstown. The year before, I didn't struggle at Brownstown. I ran top five 27 times, I think, last year. So to struggle, it almost puts you in a funk where you don't want to go.
It makes you question your ability as a driver.
Yeah, I mean, it really does.
Yeah, I can see that.
You just sit there and you look at the race car and like, what have I changed that's made us so bad?
Mm-hmm.
What have I changed that made us so inconsistent? But it was just at Brownstown. It wasn't at any other racetrack. So it was hard to pinpoint that little change that we made and then won that first night out. So it's one of those things that's aggravating.
I want to follow up on what Brad said when you start questioning the driving. When does that start to play into your head a little bit that maybe, and maybe it's not mechanical, maybe it, what am I doing in the seat? So do you start to adjust your driving style because you start to think maybe it's me, maybe it's not the car?
Yep, I did. I did it every night because year before last, I could attack the corner so much harder than anybody else out there. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't attack the corner. So I'm like, well, what did I mess up? What have I screwed up? So I start backing my corner off. I start changing things. And then it really wasn't me. It was something that we just changed over the wintertime that didn't work out.
Which then kind of throws off the notes and where you're going to go next week.
Yep.
Because if you're adjusting your driving style, you really don't know what the car is going to do.
Exactly. I really do think, some people might disagree with me, but I really do think if, as a driver, if you had somebody working on your car and you just drove, you'd be a better driver. Because really, that person that's sitting out there that might have a lot more knowledge than you, say for Brad, for instance. So if we went to the racetrack every night and he just adjusted on the car and I just drove and didn't have no say in it, just told him what I felt, I feel like I'd win a lot more races.
Why?
That way you didn't have the input.
I wouldn't be second-guessing myself because there's many a nights last year that I would sit there. Brad wasn't there. I'd be sitting there just thinking. I'm like, well, maybe I need to change this. Maybe I need to change that. And I go out there. I'm like, I should never change anything. So I think as a driver, you second guess yourself or triple guess yourself sitting there and you think too much and you almost adjust yourself out of the race because of it.
It's a confidence thing. It takes your head out of worrying about the setup and focusing on the driver. I mean, I know Mark Barber's told me in the past, you know, I run better whenever you go to the racetrack with me because I feel like my car's right. I may not change crap and tell him I changed something, but he's like,
it's just
well,
my
car's better.
Confidence,
it's a confidence
boost.
Thing.
Yeah.
Well, and who was it that even talked to us? Was it Clegg that said sometimes they'll make him walk away and
yeah, when he comes back,
they haven't changed anything, but they told him they got it all set up.
Yeah, Clegg said that.
And I think that was, and Derek, I know you're on Facebook Live, so if that's right, let me know. But yeah, he said sometimes they'll just say, just go walk away. We'll get everything set up and said they don't adjust anything. They just send them back out.
It was either Derek or one of the car boys.
Yeah, I may be mixing those up because
Jeremy, you seemed to kind of live or die on the high side this year, man. It seemed like that, you know, especially at Brownstown, you was up ripping the lip or, you know, you weren't going anywhere, it seemed like. So.
Seems like that was a place to be, especially after we figured out this little minor issue we had. It seemed like the car just came to life after that, and I was, the heat races were good for me. It was just finding that consistency in the feature to finish it, I guess. So
now you as a driver, what is your, if you, we said we'd set the track up exactly like you want it, what would the track look like for you?
No cushion,
none at all,
black from top to bottom, and then it can't be crummy. It's got to be smooth, because that's when you can run wherever, and it's really up to the driver's mobility to be able, and his car to be able to win that race. I don't think it takes as much motor then, especially right. Like Brownstown. You don't have to have the motor. You can have a smaller motor. You just got to be on top of your adjustments. If you're on top of your adjustments, you can win that race.
Now, you being a guy that likes to run up on the high side, it kind of surprised me you didn't want any lift, you know, any cushion at all, nothing up there. So
I mean, sometimes you might want that because your car is not very good, so you kind of lean on that cushion up there to be the best, I guess, you can be. But really, if it's slick from top to bottom and you can move around, you can, I guess, be a better driver that way, I guess. Gotcha. Is what I'm trying to say. So
what's your about your you, Brad? What would you prefer?
Oh, I'm going to go same thing. Just oh, yeah. As slick as you can get at top to bottom, as many grooves as possible, no cushion, no dust, no crumbs.
Because I can tell you
if you can get it to do that without bolting up, no yeah. rubbering up. But yeah, that yeah. way you can motivate around, and seems like a lot of times if you can do that to slower speeds, make for more side by side racing. And then
I totally agree with you. See, I'm a huge fan of a black racetrack. You know, I like it when, you know, I've referred to it many times when I've been announcing, you know, old style Brownstown, because when right. I was a kid, yes. it was always black. You know, that's the only way you've seen it. You
the
know?
Old school Brownstown when it was slick and you could see your reflection yes. on the shine in the racetrack.
I was just going to say that, too. That you know, was, the cars yes. would roll down the front stretch and you could see them reflecting down on the track. So,
yeah, and I think one thing, too, is if you watch some of my older videos, because I got them on tape where Mom used to videotape, I used to ride the bottom all the time. Right. Never liked the top. I still don't like the top.
You lived up there, man. You know, that was...
Sometimes you just got to live up there and set your car up to where you think the racetrack's going to be at that time.
Yeah. Well, that comes into the transformation of where our cars have kind of come to, because when I first got to watching Jeremy a little bit, whenever he first started and I first got to helping him a little bit, it was still a little bit slicker, more old school Brownstown. Yeah. And that old school slow stuff, that stop and go around the bottom, if you drag race up the infield up there, typically that would win them races, you know. But now we're not about that. It's kind of changed, you know, everywhere with the evolution of where the cars have went. We've got to attack the corners, so Brownstown has more bank on the top than it does the bottom, so yeah. it's hard to attack that bottom down there if it's slick. So that kind of puts you up there on that top where you can attack it.
Now you referenced no crumbs, where you guys that aren't huge race fans, that's when they throw the dirt, you know, the loose dirt up on the racetrack. Does it bother you when you got somebody living on the bottom and they are crumbing up the corners for you? You know, they're really not going nowhere down there, but they just keep throwing all the crumbs up on you. Does that kind of aggravate you as a driver, or you just deal with it?
It depends. Depends on where you're at that time. So let's say if you're following somebody that's leading the race and they're throwing crumbs up there, you need to try to get that top cleaned off as best as you can. That way you could roll past them. So your main thing is attack the corner as hard as you can on that deal and try to keep that clean right there where you're racing. Try to keep, if you get pressure on him, then it might help you get by him, and then you're free reign up there.
Gotcha.
But most of the time, if somebody's run the top and somebody's run the bottom, the field's going to split in some sort of way. You know, there's going to be some guys following that guy that's run the top, some guy's going to be following the bottom. So it's going to help you try to keep that area clean, I guess. But
I didn't know how, you know, when you look down and think, man, he's just 30 in my lineup.
It is aggravating, but it just depends on how you got your car set up, too. If you got your car set up where it can roll through the crumb still and still drive off the corner, you'll be all right. But
me and Brent Landry used to make some deals back years ago when we and him was both running modifieds. And if we'd have a bad night in the heat races or something and have to start back towards the back of the pack and everybody was kind of lined up on that bottom before the feature, we're going to commit to the top, you know what I mean, and try to find, because two or three of you could clean that thing off.
Right.
Way faster than one car, you know. And then usually if we could get two or three of us up there to go when Brownstown was bottom dominant, seemed like Brent was usually the prick and was always in front of me. But, you know, but he won a lot of races there for a while,
was
living
tough.
On that top when there was no top. Oh, but some of that was some of us committing to go with him so we could get up there and clean that thing off.
So that's pretty cool to hear you guys, you know, racing dirt, you know, making deals just like, you know, like NASCAR guys, you know, let's get together and, you know, let's
happens.
Hang together.
I mean,
so.
It really does.
I do want to say that Clegg commented here and said that was Dustin Carr. That's when we were talking to him and Dustin Carr. So, and I also see that Devin Gilpin joined. I want to shout out a congratulations to him. I believe Caitlin had the baby today. So, congratulations
cool.
to him and hope all is well with Mama and the baby. So, I will shout that out. But Jeremy, I'm going to give this one to you because I got a trivia question here for everybody watching for you. So you can make the decision. We can give away a hat, T-shirt, or we can give away a full pack. Hat, T-shirt, stickers, koozies, the whole nine yards.
Let's give it all away.
Let's give it all away. So here's the trivia question for Jeremy. If first person that comments the correct answer will get it, that's going to be a full pack from Throttled Up the Podcast. Where did Jeremy Owens finish in the modified points at Brownstown this year? First person that can give me the answer, you're getting an entire prize pack. I'm going to have to give the ladies on the couch a prize. Because they're going to be upset with me. They can't answer me. So where did Jeremy Owens finish?
I got
there we go.
Yep.
Looks like Carroll Hall Everode is our winner there. So I will reach out and we'll make sure we get you that stuff.
Everybody that's commented so far is right.
Yeah. I wish they weren't. I wish it was a number one, but yeah. You know. We'll live with that.
Next year. We'll be giving away stuff for you
right.
Next year.
There we go.
Matt is going to a super stock, so.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah. So. I tell you what, your last night there was rough night, man.
I don't think we want to talk about that.
No, we won't talk about that. So.
No. I do want to say on the air, though, I want to say thank you because I know we had talked several episodes before about you bringing in, you know, some body panels for me to hang up here in the studio. And right before we got started, we heard some clanging going on in the barn, and you brought us the full side of the car and a top. So we appreciate it, Jeremy. It'll be up here over Christmas break. We'll get it up before the next episode. So
for sure.
And the good news is obviously totally different cars, so we won't have any worries about running in with Marty up there. That's
well, when you get done hanging out, I've got like 30 of them down there in my shop I'd like to hang on the ceiling. You want to come help?
Hey, I can come down.
Hey, Brad, my brother asked if you held the track record briefly there.
Yeah, Brownstown for a while back. That's 2005, I think.
That's. Yeah. I was thinking that, too. I was going to answer about it. Since you was here, I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, so. I think I was the first person to set the track record in the 13-second bracket at Brownstown.
That's pretty cool. That's a cool accomplishment right there.
I thought that was insanely fast whenever we did it at 13.9. I couldn't imagine where they're at now. That's crazy.
It is amazing how much that speed has changed in those cars.
Yeah, I mean, the extra bank, they've changed their configuration a little bit, so it's sped it up. But I'm telling you, those cars are fast now. And it's not just the late models. Everything's
yes.
fast. I mean, yeah. it is all getting fast. The leaps and bounds that racing has made in speed in the last 4 years is crazy.
And that's a great point you just made because you're exactly right. Every class, yeah. the speed
yeah.
is.
Yeah, it's not just the late models. It goes all the way down to the pure stocks and the yeah. Hornets. Those oh, things yeah. are, yeah, they're fast.
Well, the Hornets are almost too fast for what they are.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's so much
yeah.
equipment failure in them anymore that, you know.
Oh, well, when the racetrack's heavy at Brownstown and it's got that cushion around the top, it's too fast for them late models.
Oh, I
yeah,
totally
I mean,
agree with
really
that.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen, through working at Mastersbuilt, I've seen several tracks in other regions of the country that actually downsize the size of their tracks to try to make them smaller and slow them down because of the speeds they were reaching.
Are you serious?
Yes, like, wow. Say, Brunswick, Georgia.
Yeah.
At one time, Brunswick, Georgia was almost, they called it a half mile, but I would say it was close to a 5/8 mile. And I think the last time before they started shrinking the track down to a 3/8, Darrell Lanigan had the track record, and his average lap speed, I think if I remember right, was 161 miles an hour.
That's
those,
entirely
those cars are not built for
wow.
that.
Wow. No, those cars
yeah,
aren't.
They are not built for that.
Jeremy, did you notice any speed difference from, you know, Bloomington, Brownstown when you went over to Eldora? Could you tell you was on a bigger racetrack on speed or?
I mean, you can tell, but really it's, I guess it really wasn't a big difference. For me, it might be for some other people, but I think everything goes so slow whenever you're driving a race car that it don't matter where you're at, I don't think. So it was faster, you could tell, but it wasn't night and day difference, I don't think. It was still racing, I guess.
So things happen, even on the racetrack, about the same speed?
Yeah, I mean, and other people might be different, but things happen a little bit slower whenever you're focused,
right.
whenever you're not
yeah.
focused. So if you're focused, you're in the zone right there, just like you're playing football or anything else, any kind of sport, everything slows down to you. You know, it's it's weird, I guess you could say, but
well, you're really doing it like Eldora. You're doing it in a bigger area,
yeah. Right?
So you got so much more racetrack over there.
You have a little more track and a little more maneuverability, so it gives you that extra little bit of room to think about that.
I mean, it looks big when you're just sitting up there watching, but when you get out on it, it's big. It's wide. It's different. That's for sure.
And I'm gonna be honest. I'm not. I agree with you 100%. But for a guy that's never sat in that seat, it is still amazing to me. And I played football, and I agree with you. It does slow down, and as you get more confident, you can, you see the game coming. But when I hear you guys talk about, you know, being at Eldora or even at Brownstown and peeking over at the, you know, the scoreboard and seeing where you're at or who's in front of you, that's remarkable to me at the speeds you're doing to come through the corner and think, I'm just going to take a quick look here at the video board and see where everybody's at. Because to me, sitting in the stands, I can't imagine it slowing down enough for that. But it's a kudos to you guys for what you do.
Well, your corner entry speed has to be so much faster because, I mean, you got such more straightaway, you know, to get to the corner. So,
and I think it's just because the corner's so wide and it's kind of more sweeping than it is stop and go, so you don't think of it as you're entering the corner that much faster. You think
well,
you're just
true,
entering the
corner. I mean, at Eldora, you've got that room and that longer straightaway to get down there, whereas like when you go to Bloomington, honestly, for me, when Bloomington's fast, Bloomington is one of the quickest places I've ever had anything happen.
Yes.
Because that place is so small.
Yep. And gotcha. Tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you come off a four to go down the front stretch, and you can't even blink, and you're already going back into one at Bloomington, you know.
Do you notice the banking in Eldora in the race car?
Nope.
I don't, under caution.
Yeah.
I can see that caution. Because you're... But
I don't under racing conditions. Like, when the first time I went there, I couldn't tell you the difference. I really couldn't.
That's a good two stories, you know, from the bottom to the top of that joint. I just didn't know if you could feel it in the car, but once you get racing, it's just part of it. Huh?
It's just part of it, I think.
Just buries you in the seat harder whenever you enter the corner.
That's pretty cool,
so.
You know. And because, you know, I'm like Dustin, I've never been in a seat, so, you know, I got to live it through you guys. And so that was always something I was curious about, you know, because when you walk on it, you know it's steep. So.
No, but for 2019, we are looking for Fun Fest rides. Throttled up the podcast, Fun Fest.
Yeah. So. Only plan on us carrying the steering wheel back to you if you let us do it.
Too. Yeah.
Well, you know, we need to work on getting a two-seater out and do a live podcast from the two-seater.
Oh, man,
on.
That would be a blast. That would be good. I love that idea.
I think we were told fair that. Week, Jim told us if we could get it out, we could use it, right?
Yeah, it was
That was what was told to us. If we could get it out, we could use it.
We were going to have to tear the barn down around it, but that was...
Yeah, yeah.
If that was going to have to happen, it was okay.
And me and Dustin, we'll go ahead and let it be known here, we are talking about having a throttled-up go-kart getaway.
Yeah, probably January or February leading into the new racing season.
Like a French Lick go-kart getaway?
Like a
French
Lick getaway,
we're thinking about just renting the track out and inviting...
Better buy it, huh?
and inviting anybody down that wants to come and see what can happen. So,
you know, this might be a way that maybe we'd have a drawing for some viewers to come with us. And
I love
it. A lot of you guys have been on the show, and you know, maybe some guys have never met you guys. You know, some of our viewers, that'd be kind of cool to
for sure
see what happens.
Yeah, again, they probably just better plan on me and you carrying the steering wheel back.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, nothing can be worse than the last time we went and Blake knocking the muffler off his car. So I have
seen Roger Heyman break his ribs while we was there.
Yeah, we heard that story when he was here. Yeah,
tore some stuff up down there a couple of times.
Yeah, they have to understand if they're going to promote it as like true racing, you guys aren't coming in just to
the no
to
bump
putt
sign
around.
Goes out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We probably just ought to tell the workers that night just to walk away.
Yeah, you need to just tell the owner to walk away. Everybody else would be okay, but the owner gets a little fired up whenever you tear up his equipment.
So, you know, they kind of talk about, you know, going into 2019. What are we looking forward to and into 2019?
New race season.
It looks like they don't want to talk about it, Dustin. So that's.
I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to be racing my own car. Last 3 years, I've drove for somebody, and big difference in opinion on what ought to be done to the car. So we've got our own car now. I'm going to race on our own. So I'm really probably won't get started right off the bat the first couple weeks, but I'm really looking forward to getting back out and racing on my own.
Very cool. Jeremy?
I'm not sure yet. You know, we got a couple new sponsors coming on, I think, this year that we've wrapped up. We won't mention any names yet, but we think we got a couple new ones, and trying to figure out what the best plan of action is going to be. You know, I want to go back to Eldora a couple of times. I'd like to win a track championship, so we'll just see where it takes us. I don't know if we'll plan on running Eldora all year and trying to win those over there and kind of hit some odd and end shows, but I love that track over there, and I'd like to race over there and see kind of what we have. We've had bad luck both times we went over there, so I'd like to see. We got a pretty good motor under the hood now, so I'd like to try it out and see if we can get a win over there. So,
and to bring up sponsors, I do want to say that obviously us as a podcast are always looking for people to support us, and we appreciate the sponsors we have. We do have a new sponsor coming on in January that we'll be announcing, and we're really excited about. So if anybody out there is looking for a sponsorship deal, we would love to have you as a part of Throttled Up, the podcast. And we want to promote you. We want to promote you guys and the drivers and your sponsors. But we're happy to try and promote people the best we can. I do want to say Eldora next year, and we talked about this the past year and it didn't come through. One of the trips you go, I want the ability to go with you, and we're going to do the podcast the trip over as we you're in the pits. We're going to do a full in-depth Jeremy Owens to Eldora next year.
If we work it out for the Appleseed again, we both could go.
I love it.
You know, right. So
because now that you know all the rules, and I know we're not going to break them.
Well, we hope. We hope we won't.
We hope not.
I want to go over there with you. So
as soon as he pulls into the gate next year, they're going to be like, that double zero's back.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. They might not want us there.
They'll just have a pit station at his pitch, yeah. So.
Pretty much.
Which we're going to try and sneak in. I don't know that it's going to happen. We're going to try and sneak in for media passes for Eldora next year. Right. PRI already approved us, which obviously.
Yeah, see, we got them right here,
They didn't look too hard.
They gave us media passes
up
there,
man. The
press was.
But we're going to try and sneak in.
That should get you into Eldora right there. That's all it takes. That's the real deal. Right?
We should be legitimate now. We've been at the biggest show there is. So.
I just kept waiting on somebody to ask us where Crothersville was.
Where's that at?
Hey, from north to south, there's racing in Crothersville between Mastersbuilt and Brad Irwin Customs and Throttled Up. I mean, there is no bigger town in racing right now than Crothersville, Indiana.
It encompasses the entire north to south. Doesn't matter that it's a quarter of a mile. But.
Hey, we don't have to talk about that.
Fastest quarter mile in Indiana man.
For sure.
All right, Brad, I'm throwing this one out to you. What do you want to give away? You want to give away a full package?
Well, that sounds like what you want to do right there.
All right.
Package, so.
Well, I figured
you
want to
give that away, right?
Yeah.
All right. So the next trivia question here deals with Brad Irwin. And where did Brad Irwin finish in the late model points of Twin Cities this year? So the first person that can give us correct answer, we'll win that full meal deal here from Throttled Up, the podcast. So whoever can tell me where he finished in the late
enough time left.
they're researching right now. They're trying to find
Google that because I don't know real fast.
Twin Cities Racetracks website just crashed.
I see a second, a 13th, and a 6th.
That's not nobody yet.
I got a 4th.
They're all over the place.
We got a 5th now.
5th. Mike Lugo is our winner because it is 5th is where he finished.
I had no clue. That's sad.
He just put 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Mike, you got it right at 5. You're
right. Ortman went with just last. Just don't know how many there were, but
that's what I thought it was. I thought it was last.
All right, so we'll reach out. But I'll say this. Obviously, you're talking about Eldora. Brad, I'm going to throw it out to you. What tracks do you love? What are the places you love to go and race?
Eldora's up there. Raced there a few times when I was driving for Bill Davis, and I think it's the history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
probably my most favorite track to race on is shut down Bardstown, Kentucky. Loved that place. Don't know what it was about there. Everything I ever rolled in there with, modified or late model, we was always competitive and right up front.
I went down there one time with Tori Collins. That place was pretty yeah, awesome.
I liked that place. I really did. I know a lot of people didn't, but I liked that place. Brownstown's the place I love to hate. I'd love to win the races there, but man, sometimes it is so hard. It's hard not to like North Vernon being right in my backyard. Golly, West Plains, Missouri, probably the nicest racetrack I ever raced on in my life. It'd be hard for me to pinpoint one.
You know, and it's kind of crazy to me, you know, obviously Bardstown being out, but with the tourism that they've kind of got up there, that the track can't, they haven't tried to pick up a track there again.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Back when Bardstown ran, you know, the coal mining was huge down in Kentucky still, and it seemed like there was a racetrack in every town, you know, at that time down there.
They've lost a lot of tracks.
There's probably been 8 or 10 racetracks close up in that part of Kentucky.
And I, you know, Bardstown at one time used to, you know, years ago, they had a good crowd every week. And the last few years that I went down there and raced off and on, it seemed like their crowd fell off, and I'm not sure why. Bardstown's a pretty good-sized town and should really support that. I don't know. It was always well ran. You was usually out of there early every night. I'm not sure what happened there, but that was a neat place to race. Both corners was a little bit different from one end to the other. It had some speed to it.
What's the farthest you ever traveled to race?
Probably West Plains. Yeah. West Plains, Missouri, I'd say. As far as I know, I think that's my farthest travel.
Was that about 7 hours? Six hours?
Probably more like 8 or 9 hours.
With
it's
the a race
pretty
car
good haul
probably,
out there, yeah.
What about you, Jeremy?
Eldora right now.
Yep. Do you have anywhere else on the radar that you really want to be able to go race?
Oh yeah, I can list all of them. Really,
I think that's the one positive for a modified though, because you could go anywhere if they race a modifieds and you're there.
I'd like to see Jeremy go to Fairbury.
Oh yeah,
Fairbury's a really
I'd
nice
like
place.
To hit
I
those,
think he'd run good there.
I'd like to hit those three big races in it's like September or August over there in Illinois. They have 3 back to back: Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 10,000 on Saturday, 5 on Friday, and 5 on Sunday or something like that. But I'd like to go over there and hit those, and we might just do it this year. And
Ortman
I know
just threw out one I forgot about. Yeah, that's when I come in, my knees were shaking.
Kentucky Lake?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we went down there to a race one time, and it was, I think they set a track record like the night we was there. Of course, we wasn't close to it. We was off. But I know whenever I come in, I was like, they asked me what I thought, and I told them if they didn't slow that thing down, that we wasn't going to be racing no heat race.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, it was crazy. I thought the car was going to turn over. We were so fast.
Kentucky Lake's the track that the Hagenast owned there for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It was Kentucky Lake, Calvert City, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Gateway would be another one. I know Brent Lee just put that on there. Gateway would be another one to just go try out. I mean, you get tore up. A lot of stuff got tore up this year, but it'd be cool just to be.
You don't think that's too small? I mean, honestly?
I think it is because you're almost – I don't know.
Depends on where you come from, because that's about the size of Macon.
If you're over
if you're
in Illinois, they're used
to running
on
that
stuff.
But.
So you think it maybe helps those Illinois drivers?
Well, that's why I think some of them guys, if you watch that modified and late model deal, and you watch there's a lot of them local Illinois guys that managed to get into that race, but they're used to racing that style of racing. You know, they're used to bumping and grinding a little more than we do because their tracks are so small right there in that area. Yeah.
Because for me, I'd like to see that track just a little bit bigger.
You know, they got a little bit more room to grow. I don't know why they don't. There might be something that they can't.
Yeah, it could be a speed thing, too, with them being inside.
No, that's,
I
didn't think of that.
Down.
Yeah.
So. All right, let's give away one more thing. And Matt, this one's about you.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So I'll let you decide what you want to give away.
Let's just stay on the trend of everything.
All right, we're going to give away everything.
Full meal deals here, man.
Full meal deals. So first one that can give this answer to this trivia question involves Matt and I. How many years older is Matt than me?
Oh, man.
You know, we say that a whole lot, so this should pretty good knowledge here.
So first one that can tell me how many years older Matt is than myself wins a full prize pack from Throttled Up the Pod Pick.
But you guys can be honest. If you see us in real life, I look younger than Dustin. So,
really,
is it the beard?
It's especially when his hat's off.
I I have, I've 22.
22? Wow.
Be honest, he may have just moved up in the list of coldest beverages.
He would pass us up. And...
Man, we're all over the place. I haven't seen it yet. No.
They're trying. They're hitting all around it. It's way more than one. And a little less than 22.
Oh, wait a minute. That was my age. I'm that much older than Dustin.
Man, people are being really nice to you. Cowboy didn't
There's
go
only
nice.
A couple of teens right there.
We're all over the place. Justin Bowling. So I've got coming in with 14 years.
Yeah.
When I was born, Matt was just a young 14-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Man, to go back.
I thought that was the best trivia question of the night.
As soon as you said you had one about me, I knew that's what it was going to be. You know, our age difference is like the biggest joke on Throttled Up.
So if it's 14, what's the actual age?
33.
47.
God, you guys are young. Not really, we're the same age.
That's what I thought we were. When you said 22, I was like, what? Yeah.
Putting you up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, that's all right. I mean, you're a little young to be my dad.
But I could be, you know.
I don't even know where to go now.
Friday was it Thursday night at Eldora? I felt like your dad.
Were you babysitting? Is that where you're going with it?
All I do is I get a text of "Where are we?" and I'm thinking, I know where I'm at.
Just trying to buy a family.
Yeah.
SUV.
Yeah. I remember my first adult beverage.
It was probably at 14 when I was born. Moving on.
13.
I don't even know where to go.
I don't even
there.
Know why we're friends, man.
Hey, if you can't laugh with your friends, they're not really friends.
That's true. That's true.
So, all right. So, Brad, breaking out your own car in 2019, where are you planning on attacking?
We'll definitely hit Brownstown some, Vernon some. I know that that points money they're throwing out at Vernon's pretty enticing, but I don't want to get wrapped up into that points racing. We did that a few years ago at Vernon, and golly. Never was won the points and was never so miserable with racing in all my life.
That's what you know. It seems like sometimes that points drags you in, and then you almost get to where you hate the sport. You know,
yeah, I mean,
sometimes it's worse because they don't give you points. Would be nice if they gave you a couple nights where you could take off for whether it be birthday parties, whatever, because everybody has something come up in their life. But when you're stuck at a schedule where you got to be here, it's almost like work, and then you can't just go have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you get out there, too, and you start second-guessing yourself while you're racing. You get behind somebody, and you're not having a bad night, and say you're running third or fourth, but you know you're a little better than that guy, and you might be able to pick up a couple spots, but you may have to put yourself in an iffy situation to get that spot, and you're like, well, dang, if I do that, then I'm going to screw myself on them points if I take myself out. So I would really like to come to Brownstown and win a crate race. I did that deal years ago. I know Jason Heyman used to make fun of me because he sat there and watched one year and kept track. When we first started racing crates at Brownstown 2007 or 8, whenever it was, I went an entire year between Brownstown, North Vernon, or wherever, and won every heat race for an entire year between the two racetracks but one, and could not win a feature. We would run second and third every week, so... Got to hit Brownstown. Would like to get one of them wins over there. Probably hit Vernon a few times. Told Shelly, you know, I'd like to venture out and hit a new track, a couple tracks that I've never raced at myself, whether it be I really can't find any that I haven't maybe raced my modified at, but say like throw in like Daughtry or, you know, maybe hit Florence a time or two. I'd like to have a little fun getting around and experiencing some different tracks this summer.
See, outside of Brownstown and Eldora, Florence is right up there with me. I love that little place down there. I don't know why I do, but yep. I enjoy that joint there.
I like Florence. My opinion of that place is it's a $50 facility with a $50,000 racetrack. But I like the track.
You know.
It's the track is always pretty nice.
Sure. I'm going to ask you with this, and I'll throw it out to both of you, and I don't want anybody to read into this in any way, shape, or form, but when you talk, would you rather have that big points fund, or would you rather have that money dispersed throughout weekly wins?
I'd rather see it through the weekly wins because it's better for the racer. Mm-hmm. Just like, and I'm going to throw this out here, and I don't know if this is a fact, but I've been hearing like this year at Brownstown for the Superstocks, Brandeis was going to throw in and make every Superstock race $1,000 to win.
Yes.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard it too.
Yes.
But my theory, not only as a racer, but as somebody on the outside looking in that makes my money through guys that bring me their race cars and pay me to work on them, our racing's declining, and you can't keep paying all them guys on the top that money. You have got to have them guys that are going to run 10th through 20th every week. You've got to get them guys enough money to keep them coming back.
I totally agree.
Or we're not going to have racing on a weekly basis in the next 10 to 15 years because we're car counts are going to be so low that we're only going to show up and watch special shows.
It's a – and this is just my opinion on, you know, paying out the points fund or weekly, you know – if you start banking on that points fund and you know, the weekly racer that don't have a lot of sponsors, he blows up five or six weeks in there and he has to set out 2 or 3 weeks because he can't afford another motor. That big money on the points fund's gone for him.
He might as well forget about that.
Yeah. You know, that's why I'm with you. I think a weekly show needs to pay and not necessarily the guy
that
wins.
Don't have to be on top. No, yeah. I'd rather see it spread from second on back because that guy that ran eighth spent just as much money getting to that racetrack as the guy that won.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we need to start taking – I definitely think start monies need to be really ramped up, you know, just
– I mean –
because you never know when you're going to get out there and something's going to happen and you're going to have to pull off. Right?
I mean,
you know?
And nothing against any of the local races or racetracks, but I've always said if I ever hit the lottery and hit the lottery big, I'm going to put every racetrack in the country out of business because I'm going to lose money every week because I'm going to give back to the racer. Those guys are going to make some money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it takes to keep them guys coming back.
Well, you know, we started the show off talking about how expensive racing has gotten, but purses haven't grown in the last 25 years.
No, not really.
You know?
I mean, you know, if they do grow, it typically grows just a few $100 on the top. It's not dispersed out through them other 20 guys that start to feature.
Yep.
Well, and I'm going to say this too, what you just said, keeping those racers happy, and I know there's all the debate between keeping your racers or your fans happy, but you keep the racers happy – the butts will end up in the seats.
Right.
Yes. That your show?
But this is, I think a lot of times you have just as many or more people in the pits than you
absolutely.
Ever have on the fan side of the racetrack.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
see,
because,
that's something I'd like to see worked on too. I mean, it's always been a dream of mine. I would like to promote a racetrack one day. I mean, I see both sides of that. You know, everybody complains, well, you know, the racetrack's charging too much money to get in, or the racetrack this, or the racetrack. It is a lot of work for that promoter not to put some money in his pocket over a season. But there are some things that I've seen through going to so many racetracks over the last 25 years that I would like to see to do to maybe put more people back in the stands because our crowds are not good on a weekly race any racetrack, really.
You're exactly
here.
Right.
I mean, now I've been to other racetracks. It's like, say, we talked earlier, Fairbury. Fairbury is very well supported, and I'm going to say their average crowd for a weekly Saturday night race is probably in the neighborhood of 1,800 people in the grandstands.
But that's a racetrack, though, that has a community that backs their racetrack.
Yes,
I mean, the entire community backs
it. And they do. And I mean, Fairbury is a fairly good-sized town, but it really. But that also happens a lot of racetracks in Kankakee, LaSalle. Those are all the communities follow those pretty good. Iowa, you get up into, say, Davenport, Iowa, Webster, Iowa, up into those racetracks, same thing, the communities follow those racetracks and support them really well, and it seems like for, you know, our area, that's kind of fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I'm going to ask this, and what do you think is, what are the steps that need to happen to stop the decline of the dirt track racing and get us back to where we're growing?
My biggest thing is for them people sitting in the stands is that somehow or another, and I have my own opinion of this, but they need to figure out how to turn that in from a, an event that happens from 5:30 at night till 11 or 12 into a three and a half hour show. That's it. That's about the time frame that you have to work with as far as an attention span that I think a big audience of people would come sit through. I mean, you look at all of your Lucas Oil races. Most tracks that a Lucas Oil or a World of Outlaw goes to, they typically ask for only one support class, and they get, of course, they have the big names. You know, their people are rolling in there to watch Scott Blomquist and Tim McCready and Don O'Neill. But typically those shows, like if you go to East Bay or you go to Eldora, they start a heat race at 7, and by 10:30, you're done. You know what I mean? Well, that's.
Well, I think a lot of our problem on car counts is the amount of classes we run now, because we have stretched – we don't have so many drivers, and we have stretched them over six classes now. To, you know, I think if we cut back to 3 to 4 classes, some of these drivers are going to filter back into some other classes.
You know, but Brasstown's always used to have that. When I first started racing in the early 90s, and Roger Williams was a promoter, car counts were so big then that – it was not unusual to have 120 cars in the pits with three classes. You know, I mean, I go back, like I could go back through my notes, and I remember it would have been 97, I believe it was when Brownstown's Jackson 100 was a Have a Tampa race. Well, they paid really good for the modifieds. There was 96 modifieds there for the Jackson 100 for the modified portion in 1997. You know, I mean, you can't find 97 modifieds now in this
area. No.
Well, and I'll agree with you, too, and it's and we kind of walked around – before we started the show, my four-year-old in there is just ate up with this whole thing now, and it's hilarious to me because it's because of you guys coming in every week, and he just thinks that race car driving is the greatest thing ever. But it's tough for me too to take him to the racetrack because some of those nights it's going to be 12 or 12:30, he can't do it. I want him to be able to, but I can make 10 or 10:30 work. So for a young kid that I want. The same thing we've all talked about is to get this in his blood, and he wants that. It does help to have that ability to be able to, you know, get in and get out.
Well, and when okay, say Mike Fields was at the shop. I guess that was Friday night. He came and picked his car up. But we got to talking about that in the past. I don't mind being at the racetrack till midnight or so, but I would prefer to be done by 10 because – in the past, I had more fun at the racetrack after the race was over.
That's what I was going to say.
Hanging with all my buddies, Mark Barber and Randy Petro.
And give the fans chance to come down and talk with you guys.
Used to, they would come through the pits. Like, everybody come down through there, you know. And
but leave the lights on.
Fun time.
Leave the lights on where you feel invited.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Yeah. Because, you know, I was always around the racetrack, and I was like you. When the races were over... Yeah. That was fun time at the racetrack because everybody stood around.
I remember, you know, whenever I first started, it was not unusual, you know, at Brownstown, Norfern, and Scottsburg, you know, any of those racetracks, there was usually a line of cars sitting at the pit gate waiting
to come
for
in.
That last checkered flag to fall so that they could come through the pits, you know, and they'd go through and they'd go see their favorite driver and come up and talk to him, you know. That was fun. You know, I liked hanging out with my buddies after the races when we get done early.
Well, and that's one thing that sold it to me. Is that we've talked about this on here before, but I took my son to the No Way Out when he was 3 years old. That's honestly where he learned the stoplight colors, was sitting in, you know, turn number one at Brownstown Speedway at the No Way Out and learning them. And you know, he cracked me up there because he always said they should just be green all the time. And I said, you and I agree, but to see what that started and then, the connection to the guys that have come in here that he's got to meet and he's got to talk to, and the silly little things when he comes in and says good night to me and there's drivers in here, he's ate up with it. I mean, it's earlier tonight when I said, well, we've got the podcast, which one, the racing one, are there going to be drivers here? I mean, what number are they? What color's their car? What, you know, so that's the connection we have to get back to, is getting these kids to see that, and you won't lose them.
Yeah, I mean, and even for me, I mean, one thing, if I was in that situation, I would like to see that front gate change not to 12 and under free. If you can't drive yourself to that racetrack, you ought to get in there for free, because we don't have very many kids there anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe that would entice people, you know, get those 14 and 15 year old kids in there that could be on the fence about getting into cars and fast stuff and, you know, turning wrenches and stuff, you know, that's kind of gone.
But you guys being so, you know, so much more approachable, you know, you get to meet the guy that you cheer for every night, you know, when everybody hung out the races afterwards.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what I like about what you guys are doing here. I mean, I don't know, you know, if there's some fans watching, that's what's cool about this. It shows the personal side of a racer and lets them know, hey, they are a typical human being and they are approachable and they like to have fun, like to cut up and laugh. That's, you know, that's what's cool about what you guys are doing with this. You know, I hope the fan base, as far as non-racers, as far as fans sitting in the stands, I hope that keeps growing for you guys with this.
Well, and we appreciate it. And we appreciate, you know, Jeremy's been on several times and Brad, you've been on, and it has been a joke with us about, you know, here in Crothersville and the whole nine yards. And we appreciate, you know, kind of that camaraderie and the thing. And, you know, when we started this and we've talked several times, this was totally about A, both of us have a passion for sitting down and talking about racing. Yep. And B, we were tired of seeing the big name guys, the Lucas Oil, the World of Outlaws guys, constantly getting that publicity and seeing what they got and saying, why can't we have something here for local guys to come on and talk about what they're doing turning wrenches, what they're doing to make the track every Saturday night, and those sponsors that are helping them get to the track, let's promote them here locally.
Yeah, it's another outlet for all that.
Yeah, it's a cool deal. It really is.
You know, and you know, hopefully everybody that has been on, you guys have gained another fan or two because he's like, you know, I didn't really know if I liked him or not, but after I listened to him talk, you know, I kind of like him now. Right, you know, so that's...
Or you might have lost a fan or two. Yeah. They might have said after, I liked him a lot better with his helmet on and I didn't know what he thought.
Right. Well, but like I told you, you know, we missed some once it's got cold, but usually, you know, once since it's cooled off here or whatever and racing slowed down, you know, I'm up in the shop and I kind of lose track of time of a night and kind of forget about it whenever you're on. But like of a summer, me and Shell, oh, crap. It's 8 o'clock, you know.
That's cool.
Get a beer. We go outside and sit on the patio. And we both flip on our phones, and we sit there. And we usually sit there and cackle the whole time.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's funny because I'll throw it out. Joe Hartwell and he's been on with us, and he's told me several times that his wife will say, "Really, you know, during race season, like you've been at the shop all night." Yep. Then you came home and you just got on the couch and you turned on your phone to listen to those guys talk about racing, and that's really. And he's like, "Yeah, that's." That's what I'm gonna do. And I actually got a text from him earlier that he said it's time. We're in a group text, and he told everybody in the group text it's time to be quiet because the podcast is starting. Yeah. So,
but I'll tell you,
I forgot. So you see Joe over at school, don't you?
Oh yeah, I see Joe every day.
But it's therapy for me. You know, I look forward to coming in here and spending time with you guys. You know, it's. It's a whole different side of being at the racetrack. You know, there's no stress. There's no you guys hustling around.
Well, I'll have to hit you guys up, too, because it's not unusual through the winter once a month or every once in a while. We'll call up like Jeremy and Cassie and Brandon Carr and Derek Clegg and, golly, sometimes Heyman and Cowboy. And we'll be up there at the shop sitting up there. We'll sit up there and play cards and drink a few beers. We'll sit up there on the weekends on Friday or Saturday night till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning just sitting up there doing nothing, just – sitting here doing this, just having a good time.
Anytime.
We'll get the cornhole boards out and throw cornhole in the shop. We just sit up here and have a good time because it's not race season, so we're not doing this at the track.
Like the camaraderie, too. You know, that's the brotherhood
like hanging,
again.
We like hanging out with each other.
Yeah, let me know. We're right here in Upper Crothersville. We'll be happy to head on down to the
shop.
We'll
throw you some breadcrumbs out on the way down.
Well, guys, I mean, we are at an hour and 10 minutes already, and it has been – nothing but fun. So I do have one more trivia question that I'll throw out, and we'll give away the whole deal again because I'm not even going to ask. It's what we've given away. So for everybody that stuck around with us, we got 52 people currently watching us on Facebook Live from what I can see here. So the last trivia question is, what is the...
Hang on, before you get going, Jeff Walters... pretty dedicated listener to us. I want to tell him, hope he gets a feeling better. I know he came home not too long ago from the hospital from another surgery. So Jeff, get healed up and get to feeling better there, man. Look forward to seeing you at the racetrack too. So
thank you. That's awesome. Yeah, and I saw Jeff just posted there, Merry Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everybody. Rick Gum also said he doesn't know if he's agreed with Irwin as much as he did tonight. So
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I'll be honest, yeah. I assume he's only listened to the part about the thirsty sportsman. So
he's been absent the last few times I've been. Maybe he quit drinking. I don't know.
So I'm going to go with that. But last trivia question of the night. As we kind of get looking ahead here to 2019 and the racing season and getting excited, what is the date for the 22nd annual Indiana Icebreaker at Brownstown Speedway? First person could tell me, what is the date for that Indiana Icebreaker? Is a winner of the full prize package here from us. So what's the date for the Indiana Icebreaker before we take off? See who comes up with it here for us. And Artwell says, for the record, it was 8 1/4. So,
yeah, Keith Sparkman, also King family, owners of the of Florence Speedway, also. March 16th.
Yeah, Jason Sellers is our winner right there with March 16th. So I'll reach out to everybody that was a winner and make sure you guys get your stuff here from Throttled Up the Podcast. So Brad, Jeremy, thank you. Brad, you are welcome back anytime.
Appreciate it.
Wednesday nights at 8 to hang out here and you know.
What are you thinking, late February we go back to every week? Or?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I will say, you know, Jeremy, obviously we've talked to you a little bit. We want to get out and get to the garage and do a live show there. Brad, we'd love to come down to the shop and do one from your shop as well. We have the equipment to kind of go on the road here and want to do some of those. So, but I appreciate it, guys. I mean, I truly, truly do mean
appreciate
it, because the silly thing is we came up with this idea, and it does still blow my mind that
people are willing to show up and talk with
that,
us.
That
you
show
know.
Up at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night and talk with us. And I do want to shout out that Brent Lee said, throw my shirt across the field. So, Brent, I'll get as far as I can, and you can find it along the way. So. But yeah, thanks guys. I appreciate it. And I wish you guys all the best of luck in 2019, and please plan on continuing to be guests here on Throttled Up the Podcast.
For sure.
Absolutely.
All right.